Well, it's a pleasure to welcome Norman J. Beauchamp, Jr., M.D., back to the MSU Today microphones. He's the Dean of Michigan State University's College of Human Medicine and also Associate Provost and Assistant Vice President for Health Affairs at MSU. Norm, great to have you back on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really appreciative of the opportunity.
Can you just reflect a bit on about 2.5 years as dean now?
You know, things I commented before when I was here was that MSU really changed my life. I grew up in St. John's. I came here as an undergrad, then stayed for medical school. And it gave me the skills and the belief in self to make a difference. And I was off for, 12 years at Johns Hopkins, 14 at the University of Washington. And my hope and dream was to come back here and be part of making a difference for the university and the college I love and the state that was, so important to me. And it has been that. It has been a chance to come back and make a difference and use kind of the skills that I acquired during my time away to support a college and university and mission that matters.
It's funny you foresaw my next question because I was going to ask, how does being an alum impact how you go about your duties?
When I was here, a few of the things, I chose the medical school here because I'd been accepted to the other medical schools in the state. And what I found really was the guide here for the college was the following concept, that they won't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I feel that is really at the core of what we need to do to bring health, hope, and healing to people. And so that paradigm has really defined my journey. And in coming back here, I have found that in leading with that, we've been able to really take on some of the biggest challenges in the state. So things like autism, Alzheimer's disease, depression, behavioral health, drug addiction, things that are hugely untreated. If you're leading with caring and compassion, then those move to the front of the list of the things that you want to go at. So those very defining principles that I learned when I was here have helped guide me. The other thing is that when I came here, I got a scholarship to go to medical school. And I remember saying to the dean of the med school, one day I'll come back and I'll pay it forward. So it's been, kind of a privilege to be able to come back and deliver on that promise that I made a few decades ago when MSU made it possible for me to attend medical school.
That's so cool, Dean Beauchamp. So let's talk a little bit about the mission of our renowned College of Human Medicine, which you lead.
We were formed back in 1964, and a lot of our focus was how do we provide care for individuals that are underserved, right? I'll give you an example. If you look at 20% of our population lives in rural communities, but only 10% of doctors practice in rural communities, and it leads to tremendous disparities in health. So one of the reasons we were formed was how do you bring the best doctors to those communities that are so underserved. So when we set up our medical school, we became defined as community-based, which is this approach that trains doctors in communities with the sense that once they see the beauty of these different communities, they'll want to stay there. And so one big part of our mission is to bring health and healing to people where they live. Another big part of our mission is you can look at adjacent counties in the state, and there's a 10-year difference in survival based just on where you're born. And that's not right, and that's not just. And where you see that is in some of our urban communities like Flint. So another part of why our college exists is to train doctors to practice in areas that are underserved in urban environments as well. And so that is really how we were set up. We start our students for the first 2 years, either in Grand Rapids or here, but then in the following 2 years, we really have them based in communities. So when we think about what our mission is, it really is to bring hope and healing to all those that seek health, and we do it through our education mission, our clinical care, and our research efforts.
And how about some of those research strengths, perfect, Dr. Beauchamp?
So some of our research strengths, one area of focus for us is autism. When you think about autism, it's very frequent. It affects now about 1 in 66 births, which is first the frequency, right? Then you look at how long does it take to diagnose a child with autism from the time symptoms show up until the mom and dad are given that diagnosis? It's 2 years. So if you imagine 2 years of struggling as you're trying to figure out, what does my child need? How can I help them? Right? So the third piece of that is that we know that the earlier you start intervention, right, training of these children, educational experiences, they do better. They reach their full potential. So if you were designing, well, how would you go after that? I talked about one, it's getting these physicians and communities across the state, but it also has to involve discovery. How do we diagnose those children earlier? Because a 2 year wait is resulting in not the right outcome. So one of the areas that's a focus for us is the early diagnosis of autism. That's one of our focuses. Another is looking at Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease. As we look at, you know, the aging population in our state, right, two diseases that you see that manifest, that people struggle with finding solutions, are both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. So we have also made that a major focus for us. We're very interested in precision health. What does that relate to? It relates to that a lot of the way we approach taking care of patients, you know, in our nation is to say, well, on average, this treatment works for a patient with this problem. Well, the challenge is nobody is that average, right? We're all individuals. So as we look at how can you make healthcare more compassionate, more accessible, lower cost for the patients and the families, precision health goes directly at that. It goes to what's unique about this patient, and then how can we have the best care? I'll give you an example. There are chemotherapies, treatments for breast cancer, that on average work, but there's a subset of patients for which specific approaches won't work at all, and there's another set for which they'll work really well. When, you know, one starts treating breast cancer, you say, on average, this is what works. Well, it turns out then maybe half of the people getting the therapy won't respond. Precision health is all about, let's take a little more time to learn about this patient's genetics, this patient's family history, right? Something called epigenetics, which are environmental factors, and then let's treat this patient, right? And you can do the same thing with preventative strategies. So precision health is another area that we're focusing on. And then the final area I would touch on is public health. And when we think about so much of what makes MSU great, right, this land-grant mission, I love the land-grant mission.
Me too.
It goes like this, right? The way I think of it, all people have the ability and deserve the opportunity to improve the health and prosperity of others. And so if you think about social work or communication sciences or ag or nursing or medicine, this idea that if we bring all of the strengths of MSU together, there's no place like us that can actually keep people healthy. And so this public health is really going directly at that. And the best manifestation for us in our college is what's happening in Flint, where we were the first responders to the water crisis, and now we've come in. We've got funding for a registry for 100,000 of the people in Flint, and we're working with them to connect the people there who were injured the most to services, as well as early detection for if they're having challenges. So autism, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's, really diseases of the brain, precision health, and then public health. And we feel like in doing those things, we can start to move the dial on hope and healing for everyone.
So well said. Dr. Norman Beauchamp, my guest on MSU Today. He's the dean of MSU's College of Human Medicine. Norm, I'm wondering, just in your time in higher ed, how you've seen the students change, if they have, and sort of how has the curriculum had to adapt to that?
How have students changed? You know, I think at the core, students still want to be a part of changing the world. That's why they come into medicine. Probably the one shift, though, I see in the most recent generations is this belief that in working together, they can have a bigger impact, as opposed to maybe 20, 30 years ago, it was this solo journey to, I'll be that practitioner that has that direct effect on patients' lives. Now it's, I'll be a part of this team that has this impact. And it's led to this creation of our new curriculum, which is called the Shared Discovery Curriculum, where one of the pieces of this is to train the physician, but train them to be a part of a team. And so we have them working in roles that are similar to what does a nurse do? What does a medical assistant do? What does a technologist do? What does a social worker do? And by giving them some experiences in each of those types of roles, they then get an appreciation that if we are going to bring healing, it's not just what happens in that patient-doctor visit, but it's all of the pieces that affect the patient, you know, during both trying to stay healthy and care. So one part of shared discovery is the shared part of the care team. Another part of what we've done with our curriculum is, you know, when I went to medical school, you'd go to 4 years of undergrad, which was biochemistry, physiology, anatomy, right? Then you'd go to medical school. The first 2 years were biochemistry, physiology, anatomy. And you're like, wait, did I start medical school? And so now what we've put in place is from the very earliest moment, we have them in the clinic learning about what are the challenges people face. And then once they see that challenge, you connect it to the biochemistry or the physiology or the ethics. So what that does, one, is from the very earliest moment, you're reinforcing the importance of the patient and why you're in med school. But you also create a lattice for knowledge to stick, if you will. Because if you go back to what I shared, for 6 years, I did basic science. And then 2 years, I was in the clinic. Where does it integrate? I'll give you an example. Now, when we are teaching students about dialysis, so we might help them with a patient who need, they might get involved maybe as an MA, taking care of a patient who needs renal dialysis. So in that, you take the opportunity then to explain, well, how does the kidney do what it needs to do? So that's your physiology and that's your anatomy. Why isn't this kidney working so it needs dialysis? Well, that's pathology. How did it ever happen that this person ended up with their kidney not functioning? Well, that's diabetes and that's hypertension. And then why does this disproportionately face people of color? Well, then that's disparities, right? And it's ethics. And so by having these very different experiential learning opportunities, these linked, you can very quickly help the student see in every context, as I'm trying to help my patient, I can be pulling knowledge in from all of these domains. And so it's really been transformative, we believe, to help our students think about everything they're learning being brought to bear for the patients they serve. Another part of this, which I think is really essential, is we have our students do a health improvement project. What that means is if we look at how healthcare is doing today, it has a lot of opportunities in terms of improving its patient-centeredness, its compassion, its cost. And what we want to do is graduate students who, when they're doc, when they're practicing, every day ask why. Why can't it be better? What can I do? Not what can someone else do? And so that's what we have them do is say, find one thing as a student that you're observing could be better from a patient and family-centered standpoint, and devise a way that you could make it better. And we think that another part of the curriculum then is how do we get them to every day say, I want to be a part of the change that needs to be seen in healthcare. So those are just a few of the key components of shared discovery that is making a terrific difference for us. And the College of Human Medicine is actually known nationally as one of the early implementers of innovations in education. Maybe the final thing I'll teach you is, talk to you about, forgive me,
you
not
are
teach
teaching
you,
me.
Is what's called milestones, which is that also in the past, what you would do is you would say, okay, you're a medical student, and at the end of 2 years, you'll take a test, and at the end of 4 years, you'll take another test, and if you pass those tests, you're ready to go out and move on to your residency. What we've put in place is what's called milestones, which is there are so many competencies that you want to make sure until the student gets that right, they don't go on to the next thing or they'll never really lock that down. And so these focuses from early on about how do you communicate compassion? How do you listen to the patients? How do you acknowledge and partner with the family? That's a competency. And so what we also do with this is we make sure that they have all of the right competencies along the way, and that ensures that we get the right depth of knowledge and not, again, the average needed across all the domains.
Well, Dr. Beauchamp, I mentioned at the top of our conversation that in addition to being the Dean of the College of Human Medicine, you are Associate Provost and Assistant Vice President for Health Affairs here at MSU. Can you talk about that role and how your two roles complement each other?
Yes. When I came back to Michigan State, one of the things that I saw was that there are incredible strengths across the university. But what I saw across the health colleges and the practice plan is as much as each of these colleges is uniquely transformative and are having a huge impact, the realization that there were some things that if we could find synergy and alignment, we could have an even bigger impact on health, hope, and healing. And so just as an example, the College of Human Medicine trains 200 medical students a year. The College of Osteopathic Medicine trains 300 students a year. And the College of Nursing graduates 900 students a year. And so when you start to look at, are there things that we can do together, it becomes transformative. So that's a piece. And a lot of what I do in this role is supporting, finding the alignments and the synergies across the three health colleges and the practice plan. The practice plan is really the group of individuals that support the practitioners in bringing the best care. The positive impact of that aligns with, again, the positive impact of in mobilizing all the strengths across MSU. There's no place like us. But tragically, the formation or the initiation of this role related to the horrible events that happened on this campus where patients who came to us in trust were violated, were injured, and it was the realization that we had to make this the safest place to get care in the country. We owed it to the survivors. We owed it to their families. And we owed it to anyone that would come to us seeking health and hope and healing. And if in trying to put in place policies and procedures and get it right every patient, every time, you had four different silos and you had to try to put in place, you know, policies and procedures without standardization, without uniformity, without clarity around who's responsible, who's accountable, you know, who's informed, then that's where predators can exist. And so it was the commitment of this university that we're going to get it right every person, every time, that led them at a pace that wouldn't be possible to really restructure so that in this role we can make sure that if it's patient privacy, if it's informed consent, if it's helping to address the power gradient that exists that didn't make it possible for medical assistants and nurses to speak up, if it's mobilizing the voice of the survivors to help us reverse engineer and say, okay, if there was a predator now practicing, do we have the systems to detect it? All of that moves quicker, more uniformly, when you create this structure that aligns policies and procedures. So in this role, that's really what it's about, is defining policies, procedures, alignment across the colleges, one, to make sure that this is the safest campus in the country, and then two, to realize the potential across these colleges and the other missions we have. And as I spoke with you about, you know, our mission of educating for the underserved parts of our community, discovery in areas that are challenged, it's so important that we do those, and we do those to the fullest. And so this really allows the realization of both in what I think an amazing place like MSU is accountable to and able to do.
So Dr. Beauchamp, I'm just wondering, and I guess we could probably have an entire conference on this, but as we move forward, what do you see as both the challenges and the opportunities, not only for the college, but maybe MSU and higher ed in general?
One of the things that we've seen across the state is new medical schools being started, which is important because there's a lack of trained physicians in our nation and in our state. What hasn't happened is that there has not been an increase in residency programs. And a key part of our strategy is not only training the medical students, but that period after training, the residency. We have found that if you have a student who does their medical school and residency in state, then they're more likely to practice in state. And if that's a big part of our mission, I think that need is one. The second is really student debt. How do we fund the education for these students? In our medical school, about 60% of our students come from challenged backgrounds. There's a philosopher, Goethe, who said, you see what you know. And so we believe that if we're going to go after disparities, then having students that come in from a challenged background, right, makes them more likely to go back out and help, as well as help the other students understand and learn. What that translates to in terms of a future challenge, though, is these students come in and they acquire a significant amount of debt. And so when we think about care in underserved areas, it's really important that if they have extraordinary debt, it becomes harder to do some of the primary care specialties. So what we have to work with the state and with MSU grads is how can we create some of the scholarships or some of the mechanisms that help with debt repayment, for example, if you go to an underserved area. So student debt is one of the challenges that I think we see in the college. When I think about higher education right now, if you go into your health systems and you look at have we realized the full synergy of education in improving patient care? I think we have not integrated it enough. And if we don't, the risk is that education will be seen as something that drives up the cost of healthcare, as opposed to something that makes healthcare more accessible, more patient and family centered, and can also improve outcomes. What I mean by that is some of the scholarship that we're able to enable at Michigan State are things like safety science, predictive analytics, supply chain management, right, communication arts, and helping our hospital community partners see the value of that in terms of improving all the things that they value. We have to get that right faster, because what I see both, you know, in our state and in our nation is they're too often seen as, you know, points of tension as opposed to points of alignment. And part of what brought me back here was feeling that if we line it up right, we can provide better care for the patients and the families, and also help education be more sustainable. I also look at, we're training all of these amazing young people, and what I think about this generation is, you know, because they have access to the challenges that exist everywhere, so much more, I think, than when we were growing up, well, you know, with social media, they want to be a part of making a difference. And I think what we could do better in higher education is creating ways for these students to get involved with experiential learning where they're a part of helping things better. So, for example, we've got amazing efforts here. We have probably the best communication arts college in the nation. And yet, change in healthcare is one of the biggest challenges we face. It takes about 15 years. So by helping these students, let's figure out how to get them in the hospital setting. Let's figure out how they can use these skills they're using, reinforce them, help our hospital partners, but then be more competitive for jobs, right? So what I'm maybe talking about is, just like with medical school education and how done right that enables the community around, I think the same thing is true for undergraduate education. They're coming here because they want to be a part of improving the health and prosperity of others. And I don't believe we've realized our full ability to engage them in all of the amazing opportunities that are there in the communities around Michigan State. You know, it was about a month after I arrived that the magnitude of what happened over the preceding decades at the hands of Nasser became clear. And I want your listeners to be aware how much that has driven me and us to get it right. And we've moved quickly to put all the things in place that will make us and are making us the safest campus in the country. And we owe that to, again, the survivors and their families. I'll give a few examples. This reorganization with the creation of the position Associate Provost and Assistant Vice President for Health Affairs. That's a position set up to put policies and procedures in place, standardization measures, make it so that people understand what their rights are. There's informed consent. The rules on privacy are clear. We've posted in the clinics, if you have any concern, this is the number that you can call. We created a position at Michigan State, which reports directly to the president, which is all about contact this person if you're concerned. We've done extensive training related to how do you, in the clinics, empower patients and empower families to speak up? How do you empower technologists and medical assistants and clerks and nurses. And we've done this in a systematic, standardized way to make sure that we're safe. I right away created a position of chief nursing officer. A nurse is someone who is on the front lines focused on what's best for the patients, every patient, every time. And this chief nursing officer's job is really that standardization and that training. We created and strengthened the position of chief medical officer. And the chief medical officer was someone I worked with Johns Hopkins and the University of Washington. And I called him and I said, we've got a lot of work to do and we've got to get it right. Will you come and join? And so one of the things I've found is that there are people that in the face of adversity that inspires them to do more. So we brought in this person, Tony Avellino. It's been completely transformative. I created a position, wellness, resilience, and care for the vulnerable. And this was a person who worked with the most challenged individuals in Seattle. And their whole focus in coming here was how can they connect with the survivors and make sure that what we're putting in place are the right things and has a mechanism so that people can speak up. So we've worked really hard on that. We have done a number of trainings with the faculty and the staff as it relates to education. So we put in place the chaperone policy for current practice, but then we said, what about these doctors were graduating? So we looked at how we did education, and we built into that education as well that very process of making sure patient voices are heard, patients and families are informed. And again, we become the safest campus in the country. Another thing that we have just initiated is something that's referred to as a trauma-informed culture. Where that came out of was 9/11, Sandy Hook. When people have been exposed to trauma of almost inconceivable magnitude, how do you help and support them? And it's not training that you get in medical school or nursing school or really anywhere. So as we're continuing to, you know, focus on how do we get better and better, having, again, this series of lectures, small group sessions is another way that I think we have gone directly at how do we have an environment that also supports the people that are taking care of those that come to us. So what I want your listeners to hear is this is our primary focus. We will never lose sight of it, and we have gone directly at it in a way that pays respect to those that were injured. The final piece is that we also believe it's incumbent on us to help nationally make it so that not only does this not happen again here, but you can look at other universities across the nation and you're hearing about these examples of predators. And so I've reached out to some of these university presidents to say, please bring us out there. We can help you create a system like we created in response. So really want, you know, all of those who have faith in MSU and believe in us to know that there's nothing that has been a bigger focus than this for us.
Healthcare in general, which is in the news every day, where are we going? What are the challenges and opportunities?
A wonderful thing that has happened is a shift from what's called pay for volume to pay for value. What that translated to is historically, if a physician provided more episodes of care, right, that was where reimbursement came. If a hospital took care of more patients, that's where care was provided. That's where payments came. To me, it was this horrible, malaligned incentive of what matters most. And what has now happened wonderfully is it's a pay for value, which is ultimately, did the patient feel cared for? Did they get healthy faster? Was family engaged? Did they avoid never events? There's about 200,000 deaths in our nation due to medical errors. And in a pay-for-volume world, you're not going directly at that. But in a pay-for-value, that's your focus. So one thing that brought me back to this state was I thought there was no better university to help lead this transition to pay for value, because we are in 7 communities across the state. We've been there since 1964, so there's trust. So one of the opportunities is this movement to really focusing on value. But where that can become a challenge is the way a lot of large health systems have responded is by, if you can have access to being responsible for more patient lives, then that allows you to get what's referred to as economies of scale. The challenge with that is it can injure some of these local hospitals in ways that big health systems will come in, they'll buy up a hospital, and then their focus may well not be what's best for that community, but what's best for the mothership, right? And what I think is really the right way to do this is to form partnerships with the health systems that really focus on providing the best care locally. Because what we absolutely know is people don't want to be away from home and be away from their support systems when they're sick. And so this approach of let's buy up these hospitals so people will ship away from their home to get care, that's not the right way. The right way is to enable those skills in those communities, and that's really what we focus on. How do you make sure you can provide the best care for people here in Lansing? You don't need to travel in Grand Rapids, in Flint. Now, one of the awesome opportunities that comes up as a part of that is it unleashes this huge opportunity for innovation. So if you look at behavioral health, right, depression in our nation, it has been so underserved. And so there's not an adequate number of psychiatrists, and people will struggle for 6 months, a year to get access. Well, one of the things that we've seen is an opportunity then to set up telepsychiatry. Because there's a dearth of psychiatrists in the UP, we could set up a technology-enabled hub here in East Lansing where it's been easy for us to recruit psychiatrists and provide care across the state. So it creates a neat opportunity for innovation. Similarly, there's something called a public-private partnership, which is new to us. But what that is it's to say there are all of these organizations that their business is coming up with innovations in healthcare. And what I brought forward and we brought forward was there's no place like MSU to come up with the next generation of innovations in healthcare in a pay-for-value environment. Let me elaborate. What you'll see historically is a lot of the innovation may come to these large quaternary care centers and say, we want to partner with you. You've got this, you know, giant health system and you're providing care for so many. And that works super well if you want innovations that are focused on people traveling to this large quaternary care center. But if you want to figure out how do you help the people in Flint, how do you help the people in Traverse City, Lansing, Grand Rapids? And so what we proposed was we have this clinical arm that touches these 7 communities. We have an education arm. And then we at Michigan State, we do about $600 million a year in research. So we've got all of these core strengths. And we said, would somebody come in and build a building for us and allow us to choose who goes in it in terms of innovators? And it turns out that that was hugely well received. And so now we're building a building that's going to house a group from Israel that does artificial intelligence, right? And we've got this great artificial intelligence on campus. We've got a group from Europe that has invented this amazing new way to treat cancer. And so that's going to be a part of this community, right? We've got the Internet of Things, which is how do you have home monitoring and then put it up in the cloud in a way that you can manage? There's a company that's going to be in doing that. And so this idea that there's no place like Michigan State to do innovations in healthcare that are relevant to the future of healthcare, which is taking care of people where they live affordably, accessibly, has come together in this super cool, transformative way. And we plan to break ground on a 200,000 square foot building in Grand Rapids, all funded externally, and we're exploring the ability to do that here in Lansing and again in Flint and potentially in Traverse City. So there are challenges in healthcare, but there the opportunities in education, in discovery, and in innovation far outweigh the challenges. We just have to maintain our sense of urgency and find that alignment.
Well, Dr. and Dean Beauchamp, thank you so much for the most enlightening and inspiring conversation. And just as we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to summarize? Or
I would like to thank all of those folks out in the community that help make all we do possible. Ultimately, a university exists to serve them. And that's our commitment, and we're very thankful for the opportunity. And again, I'm delighted to be back home.
Well, we're glad you're here, and thank you for all you're doing to move MSU forward.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
That's Dr. Norman J. Beauchamp. He's the dean of MSU's renowned College of Human Medicine. He's also the associate provost and assistant vice president for health affairs. There's much more on the college at Simply Human Medicine. MSU.edu. And I'm Russ White. Thank you for listening to MSU Today.